You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com. And we're live. Hey, everyone. Welcome to KoopaCast number 52. I titled it, Why Aren't We Allowed in the Treehouse? I am your host for this time around, the multimedia manager at PNM and PureNintendo.com, Matt Paxton. I am joined by two other people. I have Justin Hinton, who is a writer slash editor for PNM and PureNintendo.com. And I also have here James Higginbotham, who is one of the head honchos here at PNM and PureNintendo.com. And I believe it took me a while to learn this, but James is responsible for the digital stuff, the website stuff.
Online
stuff, yeah. It took me about a year to learn that. And as you all might have guessed, we're going to be talking a little bit about Nintendo's Treehouse broadcast that they did last Friday. I believe that was September 13th, 2014. We're going to talk about what games they played, and, you know, we're going to flat out ask them, why weren't we invited? Come on, guys.
I don't know if they want hooligans like us up in their treehouse.
They seem very informal this time around, so I think we'd fit right in. We've done 52 straight podcasts without swearing. I think we're good. I think we're ready.
We haven't let one slip yet. Did he freeze up?
No, we haven't, I guess.
That's a thumbs up. Anyway, for those of you who haven't gone and checked out Nintendo Treehouse, their event is on their YouTube page. It runs about a solid 8 hours. So, 8 hours to kill, there you go. If you don't have 8 hours to kill, well, luckily you ran into us, because we're going to kind of go over the highlights of what happened during those 8 hours. I'll give you a hint, most of it was Smash Brothers. You know, they played Smash Brothers for a solid 5 hours.
Nice.
That's a lot of Smash Brothers, and it was a 3DS version of Smash Brothers. So, you didn't see them, like, unlock stages or anything like that, because they specifically turned all those features off, like the unlockable stuff, so, you know, they didn't spoil anything that Nintendo didn't want them to spoil.
Surprised they didn't have any broken circle pads during their presentation.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those photos. I don't know what people were doing. I mean, I've checked out the circle pad. I've held a 3DS, despite other people's suspicions of that. I have held one. It's solid. I mean, I feel like unless you're jamming on the thing, then it shouldn't break like that. I don't know. You guys have been playing the demo, you two. I guess we'll just start out. Like, what is, like, your opinions? Have you broken your 3DSs yet?
No, I haven't broken my 3DS, but again, I'm not a hardcore, like, Super Smash Brothers player either. But I feel like you would really have to, like, really be pounding on that circle pad to really get it to snap off like that.
That's a hard question to answer, because I don't understand how people are breaking the circle pads through the demo, but I can see if you've ever been in a tense Smash Brothers battle with your friends, stuff happens. Words happen. Physicality happens. I can see circle pad breaking off during an intense battle. I don't know how the why or how they're doing it during the demo, because demo's very tamed compared to what it ultimately is going to be. But I'm not surprised, I guess, is my answer.
I mean, I'm surprised because, I mean, it's not only that the circle pad is breaking, but the demo's only been out a few days. 5 days. It's only been out 5 days, and these things are breaking. So, I don't know. That's some intensity. I've never broken a controller or any other. Well, controllers have broken, but not as a direct result of me getting, like, really angry or physical with the controllers. It's been, like, overuse or something like that.
I don't think I have either. I even sent a Wiimote into a wall and didn't break it.
How'd you do that? Did you not wear the strap?
No, the strap broke. This is before the new straps came out.
Oh.
It was Kevin, Justin, and I, and we're playing tennis. We tennis, and it just went broke. I was at we were in Kevin's basement, and his dad bought a new like 70-something inch TV. This is back in like 2005, so they were like $8,000, and it missed the TV by like a foot and a half. It hit the wall. It's before the straps, before the protector, the whatever they call them, the Wii condoms, whatever you want to call them, before all that. So it was pure Wiimote straight into the wall. Left a dent in the wall, but missed the TV, thank God.
Luckily, you didn't put a hole in the wall or anything like that. My friend in Wii Bowling sent his hand right through a glass vase.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah. Luckily, it was one of those, like, they're kind of like pre-cracked already, you know, for decorative purposes. So when it shattered, it just shattered. So there's no big shards going into his hand or anything like that. It was just like little pieces. And of course, all over the living room was took a couple hours to get everything up.
Yeah, I had a Wiimote smack me right in the forehead once. That was not fun. Yeah, it was during bowling. Went for my follow-through. Hands were sweaty. It slipped right on my hand and whacked me right in the forehead.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I think I've done that's done similar to me. I guess it wasn't 2005 because the Wii wasn't out yet. 2007, whatever. Anyways, we were playing tennis, same people, and we ended up hitting each other a few times, like just full on, like clenched fist, like across the face. I think I was like Kevin just went smack, trying to like overhand a tennis shot.
It was accidental, right? It wasn't just like an intimidation thing.
We will stick with that.
Anyway, back to the task at hand. Other games that were shown up besides Smash Brothers, we had Captain Toad, Bayonetta 2, Mega Man 7, which came out on the Virtual Console, Nintendo Remix Ultimate, Fantasy Life, and Hyrule Warriors. And they all went on for various amount of times. Like Fantasy Life, Hyrule Warriors, and Bayonetta 2 were about an hour each, and Mega Man 7, Captain Toad, and Nintendo Remix were about 30 minutes. So I mean, you've seen all those games. Is there anything that like you saw in that broadcast that made you want the game more or less? Like just any of the games?
I've kind of been looking forward to all the games in general. Fantasy Life, not so much. It doesn't really seem like my sort of thing, really. I don't know that I saw anything in particular where it kind of swayed my buying decision either way. I like seeing Nintendo show off the games. I hope they do more of these stream type things with new games coming out, because I think it's an interesting way to show off their products. But I look forward to their titles regardless, so I don't think it really swayed my decision either way.
I would have to say Captain Toad, because only because Captain Toad was one of the titles during E3 that I kind of overlooked. Like I saw like a video of it, I never really dove into what Captain Toad is or watched a lot of video of it until I saw a little bit during the treehouse, and that I loved it during Mario, and so I'm excited for that game. It's awesome.
Yeah, the levels Justin and I and Kaylin played at E3 were, I mean, there were like kind of the first two levels they showed off, which is like a water world, like they're like a land level and a water level, and they were kind of big, but you can still more or less see everything on like one or two screens. But then they showed that lava world, which was completely different. It looked like a much, much bigger experience, something like, again, since they're using the Mario 3D 3D World engine on there, it seemed much bigger, and it also seemed much more intense. I thought Captain Toad was going to be a fairly like easy adventure, but they were using those speed pads, and he was like flying through there, and they're like really narrow like places, and I yelled a couple times when he died because I really get into that kind of thing. I was like, "What are you
Yeah.
doing? They're rowing around in circles." No, and then he goes into love.
I thought like the concept was kind of neat with the lava level or whatever, because the other ones seem more like heavy on the puzzle aspect of it, when that seemed more of like a I don't even know. It kind of seemed more like a endless runner sort of thing. So it's kind of neat to see him do different things with the same sort of concept or whatever. It took me a minute to kind of figure out why Toad was running around like uncontrollably, and I was like, oh, those are like booster pads. Okay.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting because Toad can't jump on this one at all. So
Yeah.
you're only going to be moving down when you go through platforms, or you're going to be going up ramps. So that's going to add a whole different element to it, which, again, makes it seem really exciting.
But I'm like a huge puzzle game fan too, so from the get-go, when I saw the game at E3, knowing that it was based off the levels in Super Mario 3D World, which were great, and that they were expanding on it, I was really excited from the beginning that they were going to give Toad his own puzzle game.
Yeah, I kind of wish they showed off like at least a couple more levels, because we got a good variety, but things really only got interesting until we saw that lava world. The lava world was only on there for like 5, 6 minutes.
Well, and that's kind of another thing about those live streams they do, is that they show off a lot of games, but they're very small portions of those games. I wish that they would maybe take the stream and maybe focus on less games to give more time to individual titles. E3 wasn't a big deal because it was spread over 3 days, and you could cover multiple games within the entire day. The next day, move on to a whole nother group of games or focus on a couple games here or there, whatever. If you're going to do a short live stream like this, though, it seemed like it'd be better if you had fewer games so you could show off more of those games.
I'd agree. I'd also agree that, this may be controversial, but I don't think they should have given Smash Brothers 5 hours. You could have cut that down a little bit. I think we all understand what Smash Brothers for the 3DS is going to look like, between the links and the videos and other people like putting their demos on Twitch TV and all that, and we're just like oversaturated with Smash Brothers.
Well,
So I
that.
think it would definitely be good to learn some of the games we don't know too much of, especially if they're gonna like they revealed like Nintendo Remix Ultimate, right there.
Well, and that's the thing, is that a couple, I think it was only a couple days before they did the live stream, like you said, there were other gamers that, I don't know, had like access to the game already prior to the launch in Japan, who are playing the full game on Twitch live. So, not saying that Nintendo should have backed off because they already had their plans or whatever, but a lot of people had already seen this leaked content or whatever. So, I don't know. People love Smash, and so Nintendo's just trying to market, market the upcoming release, really.
Yeah, I guess I understand that. But still, 5 hours.
5 hours is a lot, though. I could see people picking up a copy of Smash Day One, though, and just spending the entire day playing Smash Brothers, so.
Yeah, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to say it. That would definitely be me.
And even though I'm not like a huge Smash Brothers fan, I may not pick it up on the 3DS just because I'd rather play it on a console. I'll probably pick it up just to have it.
I gotcha. Yeah, I'm gonna stick with the Wii U version as well. Just have it nice on the big screen.
Because you have to.
I will say that it looked like the online play on the 3DS looked pretty looked like it did pretty well. I mean, I don't know. I mean, my eyes seemed to kept up pretty well. I didn't see anything like crazy going on or anything suspicious. I mean, it looked like the gameplay was smooth. There was like not really kind of lag going on or anything like that. I don't know. What'd you guys think?
I didn't see much of that, but I hope so because Brawl was unplayable online. I think I played a full like 5 minutes of Brawl online because it was just you couldn't get through a match without lag. At least I couldn't. So I hope they fix it up for both versions.
Well, I mean, there was always that statement. Oh, I can't remember who said it, but they said basically, just make sure you have like a good router or a good connection. And like that was his comment on Wii U multiplayer online.
One, Mario Kart on the Wii, I found online kind of got a little wonky sometimes. And I haven't really found that much with the Wii U version, so it kind of gives me hope that maybe Nintendo's taking the online aspects of their games a little more seriously and trying to provide more support on those online aspects to kind of mitigate some of those issues that they may have had in the past.
Because then I don't know if they, I need to look into if they've actually done this, but the only way to really solve the issue is have a threshold of connection speed or connection strength that a player has to have. And if some player starts dragging that one down, just cut them off and drop them. You can't make a statement, oh, everyone needs a good router, because not everyone has a good router, and there's people going to jump on to games who have horrible connections and bad routers, and it's going to drag everyone down. They need the system to be able to just, if you drop under a certain amount, it kicks you off and lets everyone else continue playing what on a nice game.
Or you could have like, I first of all, I'm no IT person, cause so I could be suggesting something completely ludicrous. But what if there was like tiers of like rooms you can go in? Like if you have like the highest of connection speeds, you can play with these guys up here. If yours is medium, here you go. If you still have dial up in 2014, you can join in with all the other dial-up fans. But like nobody from the dial-up can go up to like the Google Fiber tier or anything like that. And vice versa.
Mom, put down the phone. You're interrupting my Smash Brothers game.
No, I was playing For Glory.
Good old dial-up.
Yep. Good old AOL. We are not brought to you by AOL. I did get a good chance to check out. Actually, before I do that, I thought it was interesting that there is going to be yet another Nintendo Remix.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool that they were bringing it over to the 3DS and doing more kind of like cross releases between consoles. Because, like a lot of other gamers out there, not everybody has both a 3DS and a Wii U. So, some. There you go, Matt being one example. So it'd be nice for people who may not have even known about any NES Remix prior to maybe get a chance to join into some of the fun. Because the NES Remix is an amazing game. It's a lot of fun.
I definitely agree. I actually just got some DDP points, the that Direct program that's still going on. So I think actually I'm going to put that in Nintendo Remix too and give that a shot.
Yeah, I have the first one and I enjoyed that enough that I'm actually considering buying the second one also.
Nice. How about you, James? Did you have a hankering for that Nintendo Remix?
It looks cool. I haven't played one yet.
You haven't played one yet?
No.
You need to get on that.
I know. I think I have a code for the first one. I don't remember.
You had a code? We could have given that away at KoopaCast 50.
I
40?
don't know if it's one of those. I think it's one, maybe one of the codes that got stuck. Long story short, I didn't have the Y adapter for my external hard drive for the Wii U. So it failed, and it's kind of just stuck in limbo. I think that's one of them.
So, wait, you had the same problem that Tristan had then, right?
I had it way before Tristan.
Did nobody pay attention to that video with the different colored balls and the vacuum cleaners and all that?
Yes.
Gotta have a certain kind of adapter.
Well, I thought I could outsmart them. Being in the IT world myself, I was thinking, you know what? They over-exaggerate things. And they weren't over-exaggerating. Because I have two games in limbo. And right when I got the Y adapter, it's been working perfectly fine since.
I don't think anybody's ever exaggerated when it comes to power issues.
Well, one should be enough. That was my thinking. Like it's cheap of them. Never mind. I'm not gonna get into that. One should have been enough.
Nice. We'll have another podcast later on about Wii U power usage. That'll be its own thing. But stay tuned for KubaCast 53. Let's see. So yeah, Bayonetta 2. I'm guessing you all managed to check that out as well. And they showed off a little bit of that multiplayer, which was really interesting. And it seems like that's a huge gauntlet, that 50 scenario run that you had to do.
Yeah, definitely. It was a little different. I don't know that. My wife is my player too, so when I play multiplayer games, it's with her. I don't know
Oh, that's
if
sweet.
Bayonetta. I don't know that Bayonetta 2 is her type of game, so I don't know if that's something that really sold me anymore on that title. Like if I were to have my brothers visit or something, they might want to play it, but. What really sold me on Bayonetta 2 was getting the original, the first release for free. When they announced, I was interested in Bayonetta 2 prior than that, but what really said I really want to buy that game is keep the buy one get one free offer.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll say the same thing when watching the Treehouse that I've always said, and that Bayonetta 2 is like the type of game that sparks that fear in the back of my mind that I'm going to reach that old man moment where I'm going to look on the screen and have no idea what's going on.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 13 began that when menus started flying everywhere. And now it's like it's there, and I'm looking at Bayonetta 2. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be able to understand anything that's going on.
I felt that way with 104-101. I just felt myself hitting buttons and hoping things would happen.
Well, and that's like exactly the way I felt when I first played it at E3 last year. When we were all there, is when I was playing it, there was so much action going on, and it was hard to really determine what I was actually doing. But then again, I really only had a short period of time with the game. I'm almost positive I could probably figure it out with more time and kind of getting eased into it throughout like tutorial or whatever. Yeah, it's definitely just being thrown into the action. That's exactly the feeling I had, is like, what the heck is going on?
And I mean, it didn't help that they mostly showed battles. And they didn't do much with the story at all, I guess to avoid spoilers.
I think they intentionally skipped those because the cutscenes, they were like skipping over those pretty quickly. So I think they kind of did that intentionally.
That's right. But I mean, what that doesn't do is it gives me like, it shows me how much downtime you're gonna have in between like giant battle scenarios. And so that's like, that's the biggest question mark in my mind. And it's like, is it always gonna be like up like this? Like, is the action just gonna be like high up, or are we gonna have like moments where we can like catch our breath?
Non-stop action throughout the entire game. You're not going to know what's going on.
I can't take nonstop action. My heart's just not built for that anymore.
You're not that old yet.
I maybe if I was a few years younger, like James. Let's see. So we did Bayonetta 2. We did Remix Ultimate. Just to pass this by, Mega Man 7. It's actually one of the rarer Mega Man games out there, and but it came to the Virtual Console. So, is anybody excited to pick up that Super Nintendo title? Right, moving on. So, what's up?
I'd be curious to try a Mega Man game just because I've never played a Mega Man game, but I don't know if there's anyone in particular that I'm more or less excited for. I'd be interested in trying one. I don't necessarily know what I should start with. Common sense.
Two.
Oh, okay. I was going to say common sense would say probably the first one, but.
No. See, the first one is stupid hard.
I'm okay with stupid hard.
Then, it's also a little bit more, not clunky, but muddy than Mega Man 2. Like, Mega Man 2, they refined the controls, so everything snaps a little bit better. And it's also got a normal mode for us Americans who can't take hard games.
All right, come on. I mean, there are some people who can take a hard game.
Yeah, but I mean, these specific ones,
Tristan's not one of them, but.
of course not. But and I like how we're bashing Tristan, and he's not even here. But in Mega Man 2, in the U.S. release, they put in a normal mode. When there wasn't but one in the Japanese one. In the Japanese one, it was just like the first game where you just start it and you're gone. But in the US version, they put in a normal and a hard. And the hard mode is their normal mode. And our normal mode is like an easy mode.
Nice.
Always playing on hard.
Exactly. But for you, for starting out, definitely try Mega Man 2 on normal mode, and then it'll kind of get you a little bit familiar.
Well, I'll have to give Mega Man 2 a look then. Thank you for the suggestion.
You're welcome. And then go on to X, because it's like the same experience, but completely different. It's awesome. Anyway, let's get off of Mega Man. And let's move on to the last game that we haven't talked about, Hyrule Warriors. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't seen anything of Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, okay. Now, I do have a question for you, Matt. I know you've played a bunch of Hyrule Warriors.
Oh, so much. I've gotten over like 40 hours at this point.
Wait, is that
Now,
40
what?
hours of, sorry, Jeff, is that 40 hours of pure story, or is there like side quests and everything?
Okay, well, there are two big modes to look out for, which is the legend mode and the adventure mode. The legend mode is the main storyline, and it kind of gets you through the timeline, and it shows you different characters and like different scenarios, but they're all basically the same. Capture keeps, take out the commander, let's move the story forward. So I feel like it's like an introduction to the adventure mode, which is this giant map, which is a recreation of the original Legend of Zelda map. And you go from square to square to do different scenarios. So one is like capture all the keeps, but then another one is like defeat 800 enemies in 10 minutes. And then the next one is like all enemies can take you out in one shot, but you can take them out in one shot. So defeat 10 commanders. And so I've been going on for that for a while. Whole very long while.
And challenge mode isn't available for you yet, right?
No, challenge mode is available for me, but there's only one level. And I beat it, and nothing happened. So, I don't know what to talk about with there.
Oh.
Like, yeah, things happened, and I got a bunch of low-level equipment, but that's the end of that. So I don't know if they're just going to release more as DLC or what. Even they didn't even mention anything in the treehouse, which I watched some of that in the treehouse as well, and they did challenge mode, and they didn't talk about any new levels to be unlocked. They just said, here is this challenge right here.
Now, my question for you is what they showed off on the stream, is that an accurate representation from what you experienced playing the game?
Yeah, I think so. I didn't have as much fandom for Ghirahim as the guy, Chris, I think Chris is his name, I'm calling you out, Chris. I didn't have as much fandom for Ghirahim, yes, he did, but otherwise, yeah, it's, you know, the exact same scenarios. It was a very accurate representation of what was going on. They didn't show all the scenarios. They didn't fight Manhandler, which I hate with such a burning passion. That's a specific point in my review, which people should be seeing shortly, pending YouTube's YouTubiness.
YouTubiness, that's a good word.
Thank you. But, yeah, I mean, everything in Hyrule Warriors was fine. And they didn't spoil anything, and I didn't spoil anything, so. I just want to point that out. I did not spoil anything. even though the embargo's lifted, so, you know, whatever.
Spoilers are never fun, so.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I know I straight up, I had a conversation with James, because, like, I mean, here, the nature of the story is this. Like, there's no huge plot twists in this story. You can pretty much guess whatever is going to happen next. And it's so, like, it hits some of those main beats that Legend of Zelda games usually hit. For example, Link gets a hold of a certain sword that he always gets a hold of. And I had to go to Justin and go, hey, is this considered a spoiler? But, yeah, any questions? Any other questions for me regarding Hyrule Warriors?
I didn't have anything in particular, no.
I guess my question is if someone wasn't a fan of that franchise, the franchise it's based off of, would they enjoy Hyrule Warriors?
It depends on the mindset that you're going to go in there with. If you're going to go in there and think that you're going to get an experience that's anywhere close to the classic Legend of Zelda series, you're going to be in for a world of hurt. It's got the Zelda characters in there, and that's great, but this is still a Warriors game. That said, this is easily one of the better Warriors games out there in the franchise, because it's not just hitting X's and Y's. You're also, like, you know, you're timing some certain hits, characters feel very different. The whole system is not nearly as convoluted as, like, a Dynasty Warriors game is.
I guess I do have another question. Do you think that this is going to be kind of like a one-off sort of thing where they release Hyrule Warriors, there, that's it? Or do you think that they might attempt to make other Hyrule Warrior style games, like a Hyrule Warriors 2, for example?
I doubt they're going to make a Hyrule Warriors 2, simply because how many different Legend of Zelda games can they pull from? And this one they pulled from the classic Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, and Skyward Sword. And the main reason, and Majora's Mask. And I think the main reason they pulled from all of those is because they all share a very similar art style and art direction, which is, you know, the adult Link with the Master Sword and fighting, like, giant enemies and, you know, big bad guys. So they couldn't put, like, Wind Waker enemies in there or Adventure of Link enemies in there. Well, they might be able to do that. I don't know. Well, I guess technically they did because they're Dark Nuts. Anyway, they probably couldn't put, like, yeah, Wind Waker in there or, like, anything from, like, the Tingle Rupee Land franchise. simply because then you're kind of like not only conflicting storylines but conflicting art styles. So there's only so much to draw from.
They definitely need to make a Tingle Warriors game.
Tingle Warriors game. I gotta say I am shocked. I never saw him in the game, and there were certain times where I was like, yeah, he's gonna be here somewhere.
Well, you're gathering up all those rupees. You might as well be spending them on something.
Yep. I mean, I gathered easily over 1 million rupees at this point. Actually, I gathered over 1 million rupees in the first 2 days.
Wow.
But you spend them all very fast. And I mean, for those who are listening, you can check out our Hyrule Warriors review up on our website. It's not up during the live broadcast because, again, YouTube, but it will be up right afterward. Hopefully.
YouTube is being YouTube-y.
Yes, it is. It logged me out in the middle of it uploading, and it was like, but it was still uploading, so I couldn't restart anything. Otherwise, it would cancel the upload, so I'm like, So, I don't know. Hopefully, it all works out. Is there any other grievances somebody wanted to take up with the treehouse?
Next time, I demand a tour.
Do it
during the entire NOA.
Do it during the weekend.
Do it on the weekend?
Definitely.
Not a work day.
Well, it was Friday, right?
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to have most of the day to watch the presentation, but then I had a ride into work, and they ended up showing up, like, super early. So I had to, like, run out the door, so I missed out on a large chunk of the presentation. I had to go back and rewatch it. So I would agree with James that it might be a little better on the weekend, but then again, that kind of inconveniences those at the treehouse who...
Oh, it's a big inconvenience to play video games on the weekend.
Well, to them,
I understand. I got you. But
to them, it's working and playing video games. But, but I can see where you're coming from too. Is that a lot of people work and may not be able to take time to watch such a large stream like that?
Yes. My biggest grievance is. Okay, so I was elected to cover the treehouse, right? Because I was the one who was available during that entire day. I'm like, okay, so I go on to Nintendo's site, and it's like noon at this point, right? Noon Eastern. And I go on there, and it's like, oh, it hasn't started yet. Well, okay, so I guess it's supposed to start later. And I go, and there's like a little thumbnail, and it'll say when it started. And it clearly said 3 p.m. It starts at 3 p.m. I'm like, okay. I'll just come back later. Or it says like 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I'm like, okay. And for those who don't know, that's 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So it's like, okay. So I have like the day to do work or, you know, whatever. So I did work. I went out for a little bit. And then I came back at like 6, a little after 6. And I go on and there's Smash Brothers. I'm like, what happened to the rest of the games? And then I go on and find another page. And it goes, yeah, well, no, we started earlier. I'm like,
yeah, they
everything.
Yeah, they covered all the other games earlier, and the excuse me, the Smash Brothers started at 3. That's okay though. There wasn't much. I mean, there was some new stuff they showed off, but a lot of it was essentially stuff we kind of really already expected from the games. I mean, may have showed off a new level. Or like the Bayonetta multiplayer, but if I remember correctly, we already knew that there was going to be multiplayer in Bayonetta. We just didn't know what it looked like. So yeah. I think a lot of it was more visual rather than like reporting on anything really.
Nothing truly informative, anyway.
Right.
All right. And then we're just going to go ahead and take a break from the treehouse, and move over to our other topic for today. If anybody looks at their watches, clocks, calendars, hourglasses, timepieces, they'll notice that I'd say about, according to this, 3 days ago was the 13th anniversary of the GameCube releasing in Japan. And so the reason I'm using the Japanese release date to talk about the GameCube rather than the North American release date is because the North American one is November 14th. And that time gets a little bit busy, and we'll have a lot of other things to talk about around that time because holiday season. So I figured, why not do it now? So for those of you who don't know, Nintendo GameCube, it's codenamed Dolphin, came out November 18th, North America, September 14th, Japan, sold 21.74 million units worldwide, and released inside the PS2 and the Xbox. When I read the numbers, the 21.74 million, I thought those were pretty good, but I also remember, like, in the side of my mind, I remember people saying, like, GameCube is kind of like where Nintendo started to, like, go decline a little bit. Like, it wasn't as good as the N64. It wasn't standing up to the PS2 and Xbox. So I kind of want to see what you guys, like, remember about the GameCube and what you think its legacy is.
It's a purple cube. That's all I know. I haven't played it, so I don't have much input. Would I like to play it? Yes, because I always enjoy Nintendo games, always have. I didn't own an N64, but I played a lot of it with friends over at their houses and whatnot. But I would love to get some hands-on time with some GameCube games, and hopefully sometime in the future I can. It sounds like there are a lot of good games on the GameCube, but I have no real bearing because, again, I haven't played one. So all I know is it's a purple cube.
Yes. James, it looks like you're thinking pretty hard there.
Yeah. I guess if I had to sum up the GameCube, I would say the lost generation. Because, like, not a lot of people, as you said, was it 24 million people? In comparison, 21.74. In the comparison, not a lot of people played the GameCube compared to any other console almost. But the GameCube, I don't know what Matt's going to say about it, is a super solid system. It had some fantastic games. Some of my greatest gaming experiences was on the GameCube. I can't really compare it to the 64 because I never really had a 64. Long story short, my parents had a rule where they wouldn't buy us video game systems. My brother's 7 years older than I am, so he was able to buy the NES, Super Nintendo, but he was older and didn't really buy the 64, and I was too young. So the GameCube was the first one I bought because I was getting into high school. But to me, I don't know, I played a lot of the 64. To me, the GameCube had in a way, it was better than the Wii. I enjoyed the GameCube a lot better than the Wii. I had a lot more good experiences. The game, a lot of people didn't know, the GameCube was actually, in some aspects, more powerful than the PS2. Well, the Nintendo screwed up with is on that disc space. Mm-hmm. If they had the normal disc space as the Xbox or the PS2, the GameCube would have been hands down the best console power-wise. It's just for some reason they wanted to make the small, stupid discs. And it just kind of screwed up where they're going for. Like, they said Resident Evil 4 was the best on the GameCube. But I remember, I think it was Nightfire. I think it was Nightfire, one of the James Bond games. I had a lot of cutscenes. I played a PS2 version and a GameCube version. The GameCube version actually looked better in-game, but the PS2 had longer cutscenes because the disc can hold more. So it's things like that Nintendo, I'll say, screwed up all but made a mistake on the game with that smaller, stupid discs.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. Around that same time, because it stacked up against, like, the, you know, the PS2 and the Xbox, and they had the small discs, and around that time, we knew that the PS2 could play DVDs, mm-hmm. which back then was a big deal. It was like, oh, so you have a game console and you have a video console? You know, so I feel like that also helped the PS2 out tremendously. Mm-hmm. Aside from its giant library and, like, one of the best selling consoles of all time. But I feel like that for me, and I know for a lot of people, the GameCube was something that was remembered fondly after the fact. Mm-hmm. When I was playing the GameCube, I remember like looking at it, like, oh man, I bet on the wrong horse on this one. Like Luigi's Mansion was great, but other people were playing like Final Fantasy X and like Gran Turismo, and I'm like, oh, everything looks great. And I'm like, I look at my GameCube, and I'm like, it's just a cube. I mean, yeah, it's got this handle right here, and I can take it with my friend, take it down the street and go on walks or whatever. But, you know, I didn't see it. And then Wind Waker came out, and then I realized, yes, I did pick the right horse.
Well, and I guess my take on it is a little different, because when I've been playing video games, like, for a really, really long time, and I was never in control of what was bought for us. Like, we had a Nintendo's, didn't have a Super Nintendo, but then my parents went with Sega over Nintendo. So I owned a Genesis, then I owned a Dreamcast, and then I had PlayStation, PlayStation 2. So really, I've played a lot of Nintendo games outside of GameCube, but never really owned many of the consoles. And kind of hindsight, now that I'm older and getting back into Nintendo, and I'm a huge fan of Nintendo, I really wish I either held on to the old consoles that I did have or bought more Nintendo games when they were out initially, because now I'm missing out on a lot of those older experiences, and I kind of have to backtrack a little bit to get some of those experiences. So to me, it kind of seems like lost time almost. Not that I didn't enjoy my Sega and PlayStation, but I think I probably would have enjoyed it more with a Nintendo system of my own.
I gotcha. And one thing I forgot to mention, the Nintendo GameCube, it was a unique system in that it was the only one that did not immediately launch with a title starring Mario. You know, the NES had, you know, Mario Brothers, SNES had Mario World, 64 had Mario 64, Wii had Super Mario Brothers Wii, Wii U, you know that story. And then, but the GameCube, it launched with Luigi's Mansion. And it was completely unlike anything else, or in terms of the Mario series, you know. It was slow-moving, puzzle-solving, it starred Luigi, so Mario was nowhere in there. He got kidnapped this time around. And, I mean, I think Nintendo got criticized for that. But, of course, now, like I said, the GameCube was one of those, it's looked upon fondly after the fact, and Luigi's Mansion was definitely one of those titles that was, you know, underappreciated. James, I'm pretty sure you got a chance to pick it up, right?
Yes. It was actually later, but because I think Rogue Warriors was the game I bought at launch. But yeah, no, Luigi Mansion was great, and I had to go back and refresh my memory of GameCube games, and it's impressed me the variety of games that you have, because you had a lot of mature games. You ever played Killer 7?
That's right. I have not played it, but that's a Suda 51 game, right?
It was, and it's a fantastic game, Time Splinter. But then you have games like Paper Mario and Vita Joe, which I think was the first time we saw Vita Joe. And it's just, GameCube just had so many great different memories. You have Resident Evil, of course. There wasn't a time where I wasn't pleased with the GameCube like I was with. I'll admit there was a time I became not pleased with the Wii near its end of its life cycle. But the GameCube, I was happy with it the whole time I had it. I didn't have any regrets.
I can tell you there was a period where I wasn't pleased with Mario Sunshine.
Well, yeah, I think we all were. But yeah, Mario Sunshine, that's like one of the, I won't say least talked about, but overlooked Mario games. I think Mario Sunshine was fantastic, too.
I'd agree with that now. I think it's good. I still don't think it's the best Mario game.
I agree with you. I think at the time when I first saw Mario Sunshine, I thought it was dumb. I didn't play it right away. I didn't play it until later. I was like, this is dumb. But like once I played it, I was like, wow, this is actually a really good Mario game.
And of course, like I said, there was Wind Waker. So people who experienced it again, Wind Waker HD. But I think we all remember the beginning of Wind Waker, right? It was, I mean, before, of course, before Wind Waker, there was that tech demo which was like the GameCube rendered Link versus the GameCube rendered Ganondorf. And it kind of looked like a Soul Calibur kind of situation that was going on there. And everyone's like, oh, this is the future of Legend of Zelda. You know, fast forward a couple years later in E3, and then we get cel-shaded Link. And the backlash, at the internet today was around during Wind Waker, which was like 2003, right?
Yeah, I think something like that.
Can you imagine? Like, we wouldn't hear the end of it, ever. We'd still be hearing about it. Of like, oh no, these are kiddie graphics, and I don't want to play this, you know, kiddie game. God, look at Link. He looks like a 4-year-old. And where's my dark Ocarina of Time Majora's Mask Link?
That's an interesting thought. If that happened, that would probably be the worst Zelda of all time. Instead of being probably almost everyone's top three Zelda games.
Yeah.
Just because of if they had that backlash, people would have just hated it, I think, because of that. It would have probably gone down in history as the worst Zelda game, which in my opinion, in my personal opinion, it was my favorite Zelda game, but that's me.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. It's up there. I think it's tied for Majora's Mask for number one.
That's what I liked about the HD re-release for the Wii U, is that I never got a chance to play Wind Waker, so when they said they were going to remake it in HD for the Wii U, I was really excited. Since I haven't played all the way through it, it's now sitting in my eternal backlog, but getting a chance to play it and stuff, it's a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that they decided to remake it. Or re-release it, I should say.
100% agree. And then the final game I have on this list of critically acclaimed GameCube titles is, of course, Miyamoto's latest IP, Pikmin.
It's true. Got started there.
And that was definitely a very interesting title when I first picked it up. I don't know about you guys, but it took me a while to like come around to Pikmin. It was like I don't know. I don't know what it was about it. It was like it was so chill compared to all the games I was playing at the time. Even like compared to Mario Sunshine, like at that point I was playing like a lot of fast action games and like, you know, trying to think of the games I was playing at the time. I don't know, maybe Battlefront was around at that time too. But like, you know, a lot of shooters, I was playing Jedi Knight and a lot of that stuff. And then along comes Pikmin and it's like moving at snail's pace and you're like trying to control these little creatures going around. I'm like, I don't understand what's going on. What do you mean the day's over with? But that's definitely became a very appreciated classic in a trilogy. Yeah, a very slow-moving trilogy, I have to say.
Well, I think it's one of those games where Nintendo kind of took a gamble and kind of thought outside of the box to come up with kind of like a new concept, and it just kind of like really stuck. I think initially, I think it more had like a cult following, more or less, but with release of Pikmin 2 and Pikmin 3 now on the Wii U, I think it's gathering a bigger audience. Like, Pikmin 3 is an amazing game, and I think it's come a long way since the first one on the GameCube.
Now we can't forget games like Metroid Prime 1 and 2.
Oh, no! I didn't even think about Metroid! I'm going to get fired.
Yep, that's it. Get off the air. Right now. Go.
That was my entire legacy, and I totally forgot to mention
Well, like, there's just so many great games on the GameCube. Like, I honestly can probably name more great games on the GameCube than I can on the Wii. Not to keep bashing the Wii.
I would agree with that. You know, Metroid Prime was the, that's how I...
Oh, he froze up again.
He froze up again. Anyways, there's Wave Racer and Beyond Good and Evil. Is this the
Metroid Prime trilogy?
You froze up, so we didn't catch any of that.
So I was talking about Wave Racer.
So I guess my passion, Metroid speech.
We missed it.
Fell into fears.
Yeah, Eternal Darkness. Sorry, keep going.
I remember Wave Race. It was great.
It was great.
But I was saying that Metroid Prime was how I got into the Metroid series in the first place.
Gotcha.
And it's aged incredibly well. I must have played that game like 1,000 times. And then 1,000 more once the trilogy came out for the Wii.
That was one of the best-looking games of that generation through all platforms, I think. Like, that game looked, 1 and 2 both looked really good.
I 100% agree with that. Mm-hmm. I like 1 way more than 2, though.
I like 2 because 1 was a little bit slow paced for me. I don't know.
I don't know. I think 2 was slow paced, too. I mean, you had, like, Ori got fetch questy with all those temple keys.
That's true. Going off a little bit off tangent, what did you think of 3?
Not as good as 1 and 2. Technically, 3 was definitely a better one, better than the previous two, technically.
Yeah.
Like, you know, technical specifications. But, you know, as far as correcting the environment and having an open world experience and having something that was truly a Metroid experience, 1 and 2 were definitely the best.
Mm-hmm.
One being a little bit better than 2. I think one of the problems I had with 2 was all that dialogue. And I say all that dialogue in there that there was like 50 lines of dialogue through the entire game. But and then of course 3 came along and it was like, we're going to shove the story in your face all the time.
Yeah.
And you need to care about these bounty hunters that we just introduced you to. And we're not going to give any backstory to. Why aren't you caring?
Well, kind of back a little bit to James and his Wii bashing. Is that the problem with the Wii is that, I mean, there are some pretty good games on the Wii. I mean, Super Mario Galaxy was outstanding. That's just one of a handful of titles that like really, really stood out on the Wii. The problem with the Wii, though, is that you had these great games that just got buried under the mountains of crap that were released on that system. And I think GameCube had, I'm not sure because, like I said, I didn't own a GameCube, but it seems to me like the GameCube had less of that. Like, it had a great library of games and less of the extra crap.
And, I completely agree with that.
And with the Wii U, I would rather have it in a GameCube situation over a Wii situation where I'd rather it, if it's, I wouldn't want it to get overly popular and be loaded down with a bunch of crap. I would rather have a system undersell and have more great games on it than have it get loaded down with a bunch of shovelware. It would benefit Nintendo's pocket for it to become overly successful, but I didn't like that situation with the Wii where you had to kind of really filter through all the junk to get to what's good.
Yeah, I totally understand that. GameCube. I don't know. I think I said everything I could about the GameCube. Oh, and there's Smash Brothers Melee, which everybody played to death. And I completely broke my disc on that. But so I think we're going to summarize. You know, GameCube, great. Wii, not as great as the GameCube.
Well, let's hope for better for the Wii.
Yes.
There's one more thing I want to say about retro titles. Have you guys ever seen the YouTube channel videos of, like, teenagers watch something or play with something?
No, yeah. I don't want to do that to myself.
Well, they play they play and watch like old, like the one I watched recently was NES. They introduced them to the NES. And anyone who watched Game of Thrones, Arya, the girl who plays Arya on there, she's like 16 or 17 of her life. She's on there. And so they introduced the NES, and none of them really, half of them didn't know what it was, really. And whom who knew what it was never played it. And then I got down something like, this is why Nintendo will always be successful releasing Mario Bros. 3, Mega Man, all those, on Virtual Console, because kids who are now into video games, 18, 19, even 20 years old, never played those games. Like, I own Mario Bros. I own three other versions of Mario Bros. 3. I own it on the Wii, 3DS, and Wii U. I'm always going to buy them. So Nintendo always is going to have this cash money of older games they can re-release, because there's always going to be kids that never played these great games. So when my child grows up, he's never going to play GameCube, so they can re-release GameCube games like Metroid Prime, and he can be playing them for $5 10 years down the road or whatever.
Yeah, now, definitely.
James, you said you have like 3 copies of Mario Brothers 3 on like through virtual consoles.
Yeah.
I can beat that. I have 3 copies of Mario Brothers 3 right here.
I wish I had my original copy still. That'd be cool.
Would you like one?
I would just look at it. That's one of my goals. I need to buy an actual working NES.
I've still got mine. It's great.
I've got an NES, but it doesn't work. I'm kind of disappointed. They showed me that it worked when I bought it. I got it home, and I got it to work once, and then it stopped working. I was like, shoot. By the way, you have to watch that Kids React to Game Boy video.
Not going to do it. Not going to do it.
It will make you feel super old.
Exactly. Why are you making me do it then?
They're like looking at the thing like, how do I turn it on?
How do you not figure out a switch? It's a switch. Ugh.
Okay, well, they're used to buttons. You just press buttons now. What's a switch?
Why isn't it a touchscreen? Do they say why it's not a touchscreen? Do they ask that?
You gotta watch it.
No. Answer the question. That's all I need.
And then they couldn't figure out what to do with the cartridge. It was pretty hilarious.
The NES one, I actually almost yelled at the screen because I guess they asked them, what's better now or video games then. They're like, well, because, you know, this doesn't work half the time because they had them blow in the cartridge and do the whole thing. And like, you know, and the technology isn't there. It's not as good as this generation. I'm like, that's a bunch of crap. The NES is better than anything of this generation. Because it doesn't have nice, fancy graphics. It doesn't mean that it's not good. And you had to blow on a cartridge and put up and down and in the slot a few times. It doesn't mean it's not great.
Well, that's all part of the experience.
Exactly.
That's what they don't understand. If you don't have to go through those steps, then you're not getting the full experience.
Part of playing a game was playing the game of actually starting the game. And the kids in the prank, come on, start. And you get it started and it comes up and you're like, especially playing Mario Bros. 3, when the curtains, finally you see the curtains open up, you're like, yes, I got it.
Now, James, here's what I took away from an entire rant that you had here. That you think the NES is better than the Wii U.
As of right, no. I'm not going to comment on the Wii U now, but better than the Wii, yes.
So, yeah, because you said, and I quote, I've got it right here. It's better than anything in this generation. The Wii U is in this generation.
No, so. It's not. Not according to all the other gamers out there.
Oh, right, of course.
Nintendo's one generation behind.
We're a generation. What is Wii U then? What, 7.5?
Sure.
They're in the Nintendo generation.
The Nintendo generation.
Yeah, they've got their own little generation. They do whatever they want. And
nice. Well, on that stunning revelation, we have to go. So I want to thank all our viewers for tuning in to another KoopaCast number 52. We'll be back in 2 weeks for KoopaCast number 53. If you want to get a hold of us, please email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. We also have individual Twitter handles that you can check out on the main website at purenintendo.com. We love getting new Twitter followers, and we love interacting with our fans. So, again, thank you, viewers. Thank you, James and Justin, for showing up for KoopaCast number 52.
You're welcome. Thanks for being an awesome host.
Thank you very much. And, you know, please, we'll see you in 2 weeks with KoopaCast number 53.